Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please take the roll?
27 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only members excused from the call of the House today are Representatives Pettyjohn and Zawacki.
Our chaplain today is Pastor Kermit Wilson of the First Church of God. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let us pray. Our gracious Heavenly Father, it is with a heart of thanksgiving that we open up the 75th day of the House of Representatives. We are thankful for life and salvation, for friends and for families and for co-workers and for the many gifts that you've given us. Lord, we pray for our fellow Alaskans. Some need jobs, some are sick, some are in the midst of difficult circumstances. We pray that the Holy Spirit would go and comfort and provide for them. Father, we ask your presence as we conduct business this day. May the decisions be full of wisdom for today and tomorrow, so that we may secure and provide a strong future for our children and their children and many generations to come, for our friends and our neighbors. For the glory of God, in the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.
Representative Gruenberg, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to move and ask unanimous consent to prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 73rd and the 74th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 73rd and 74th days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals as certified for the 73rd and 74th legislative days be adopted.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journals before you today? Hearing no objections, the journals stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction? Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Menard and I have several constituents from the Mat Valley with us today. They're down here with the Mat Sioux Bowling Tournament group. And if I may, I'd like to read their names. And as I read their names, if they would stand up, please. One of the chaperones with the group, Bob Gaffilian, Shirley Novak, Susan Brodigan, Jerome Brodigan, and the sister to Mark, the cook that makes us all a little overweight in the lounge, Angelique Lawton, Amy Lawton, Phyllis Hobbs, Andy Hobbs, Patricia Hobbs, Larry Lanehart, Kip Rushler, Kenny Johnson, Stephen Lawton, and Bobby Gaffilian. And I wonder if we have any 300 games in that group tonight. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, in the same gallery, I have three generations of constituents of mine and Representative Sons from Ketchikan, and they are also up here to participate in the bowling events, and they call themselves Champion Bowlers of Ketchikan. And so I'd like to introduce to the body at this time Wally Kubley, Don Kubley, and Mike Nygaard.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I notice in Gallery A, a constituent of mine, Jean Carlo Flanagan of the Alaska Native Arts Association, and she has with her, I think, the King Island Dancers. I don't know if anyone else would introduce them. Jean?
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me great pleasure today to introduce the King Island Dancers. They're right behind us. They have performed last night and they will perform again tonight. And it's a very good chance where we can appreciate a very old and unique culture that is presented to us. They were brought here to Juneau through the efforts of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council and the Perseverance Theater. They're here. There's Paul Tiolana and his wife Lara and their daughter Lillian, and Simon Bushrook and his wife Helen. And there's Ted Ayak and Agnes Ayak and Sylvester Ayak and Margaret Anolik and Leo Kunuk and Earl Mayak and Cheryl Saclamana. And also with them is Rose Adam Fostick with the Arts Council here. Please welcome them with me.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are two members of the Juneau arts community that are with us this morning who were instrumental in helping to bring the King Island Dancers here, Debbie Bailey from Perseverance Theater and Natalie Rothaus from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council.
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the Governor.
Dear Representative Grusendorf, I have signed the following and I'm transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Committee Substitute for House Bill 68, State Affairs, relating to the authority of Fire Department Officers, Chapter 4, SLA 1987, and Senate Bill 122, relating to the term of office of the student member of the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska, and providing for an effective date, Chapter Number 3, SLA 1987. Signed sincerely, Steve Cooper, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citations and they've been transmitted to enrolling. Honoring Howard Thomas, Alaska Engineering Society's 1986 Anchorage Engineer of the Year. Honoring Angoon Old Timers Basketball Team. Honoring the Heidelberg Sons of Sequan. Honoring Eric Kiefel, Aaron Overton, Aaron Morse, David Oberg, and honoring George Atla. The Senate has approved the following citation and is transmitted for consideration. Congratulating Les and Mildred Nerland, First Family, 1987 Fairbanks Ice Festival, by Senators Bennett, Fahrenkamp, Coghill, Rohde, Binkley, Kurtula, and Zemanski.
That citation will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
The Senate has passed the following and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 1, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to the rights of physically and mentally disabled persons.
Two standing committees, Health, Education, and Social Services, and the Judiciary Committee.
Senate Bill 91 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act limiting liability for activities of the Alaska National Guard.
State Affairs and the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the daily order of business to reports of standing committees.
The Rules Committee has considered House Joint Resolution Number 4 relating to a nuclear-free zone in the Arctic, the Subarctic, and Alaska. Recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 4 rules with the same title and recommends as follows. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, signing Dupas, Navarre, Grunberg, and Grusendorf. Having no recommendation, Hoffman. Pettijohn signed, pass at your peril. And Martin signed, do not pass. House Joint Resolution 4 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 12 relating to limiting certain kinds of credited service in the teacher's retirement system. and recommends as follows. The report was signed by Porcheau, Vice Chair, signing Dupas, Rieger, Larson, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Davis, Brown, Gall, Frank, Porcheau, and Swackhammer. House Bill 12 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 18, establishing the Willow Creek State Recreation Area, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 18 Resources with the same title, and reports it back as follows. The report was signed by Porcheau, Vice Chair, signing Dupas, Porcheau, Larson, Swackhammer, Brown, and Davis. Having no recommendation, Gall, Boyer, Rieger, Frank, and Wallace. House Bill 18 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 70, relating to the State Medical Board, and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 70 Finance with a new title, and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Porcheau, Larson, Gall, Swackhammer, Boyer, Rieger, Frank, Wallace, Brown, and Davis. House Bill 70 has no further referral. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 101, relating to state toll facilities, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Cato, Chairman, signing Dupas, Boucher, Pierce, Hudson, Springer, and Cato. House Bill 101 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Transportation Committee has considered House Bill 196, relating to employments, enforcement of compliance with financial responsibility, and certificate of compliance requirements for air carriers, penalties, issuance, and display of certificates of compliance, and the definition of aircraft, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 196, Transportation, with a new title, and recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Cato, Chairman, signing do pass, Boucher, Pierce, Springer, Hudson, and Cato.
Committee substitute for House Bill 196 has picked up a fiscal note and will have to have a Finance Committee referral.
It will now go to Judiciary and Finance. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 197, relating to delivery of supplies purchased under the State Procurement Code, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing do pass, Ellis, Davidson, Copen, and Donnelly, and Menard. Furness has no recommendation. House Bill 197 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Hess Committee is considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 33 Hess, relating to the violation of compulsory education laws, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 33 Hess with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Kopanen and Ellis, co-chairs, and concurring Grunberg, Hudson, Kopanen, and Phillips. Having no recommendation, Donnelly, Hanley, and Ellis. Senate Bill 33 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee is considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 87, Labor and Commerce, relating to the credit card interest rate that may be charged by certain financial institutions, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Donnelly, Ellis, Davidson, and Kopanen. Furness signed, no amendments needed. Menard signed, no recommendation. Senate Bill 87 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the introduction of resolutions and citations.
Citation honoring Sister Mary Claire Quilla by Representative Menard. Citation honoring the Gaison Dancers by Representative Gall. The citation honoring Wasilla High School Hockey Team 1987 Region 3 Champions by Representative Menard and Larson. Citation honoring National Association for the Advancement of Colored People's Academic Olympics by Representatives Ellis, Brown, Grunberg, Collins, Boucher, Senators Josephson, and Sturgiluski. Citation in memoriam, Frank Thrasher, by Representative Grusendorf and Senator Eliason.
The citations will be referred to the Rules Committee for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 221 by Cato. An act suspending requirements for reports on arrangements and offers to sell the Alaska Railroad and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, Transportation and Finance.
House Bill 240 by Donnelly and Grunberg. An act relating to illegally controlled enterprises, the forfeiture of property that is used in violation of state law and extortion, and providing for an effective date.
Judiciary and Finance.
House Bill 241 by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. An act providing for the independent investigation of complaints against foster parents.
Hess and the Finance Committee.
Hospital 242, by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, an act relating to the training of foster parents.
Hess, Finance.
Hospital 243, by Schultz, an act prohibiting certain sale and consumption of alcoholic beverages.
Hess, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
Hospital 244, by Navarre and Swackhammer, an act relating to the addition of land to Kachemak Bay State Park and Kachemak Bay State Wilderness Park.
Resources and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 245, by Barnes, Adams, Collins, Furness, Grunberg, Hanley, Hudson, Martin, Miller, Navarre, Pierce, Phillips, Swackhammer, Taylor, and Zawacki, an act relating to permanent fund dividends for individuals incarcerated after conviction for a felony and providing for an effective date.
Health, Education, and Social Services, the Judiciary Committee, and the Finance Committee.
House Bill 246, by Boyer, Brown, and Taylor, an act relating to contributions from permanent fund dividends and providing for an effective date.
State Affairs, Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on that calendar?
House Bill 43, by Donnelly and Kopanen, an act relating to return transportation for workers. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 43, Labor and Commerce, with the same title, and attaches a zero fiscal note and a zero fiscal note with analysis. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman. Signing do pass, Donnelly, Ellis, Davidson, Menard, and Kopanen. Voucher signed, do not pass without clear constitutional opinion. Furness signed, do not pass without amendments. Bill needs work. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 43 and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute by Judiciary Committee with the same title and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Sun, Chairman. Signing do pass, Sun, Cotton, Navarre, and Grunberg. Barnes has no recommendation, and Ulmer has no recommendation. Taylor signed do not pass, needs amendment. The Rules Committee has considered House Bill 43 and recommends it be replaced with the Rules Committee substitute with a new title and do pass. Report was signed by Navarre, Chairman. Signing do pass, Navarre, Grusendorf, Hoffman, and Grunberg. Signing no recommendation, Martin and Pettijohn. I have three committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having three committee substitutes, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 43.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the CS rules? Hearing no objection, CS rules has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to amendment number one?
Amendment number one by Martin, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I move amendment number one.
Objection. Hearing objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's kind of unusual in any bill that we have this particular wording on page 2, line 14 and 15, pertaining to when an act will take effect. Normally, we just leave that alone, and everyone knows, lawyers know and business people know that a law takes effect 90 days after an act has been passed by the legislature, unless specifically we put in a limiting date or a particular date. In this case here, the generics of the wording makes me feel that, as it says in line 15, the effective date of this act, on or after, it's kind of unclear, and some people may think that, well, immediately we must pertain to the local hire option of providing transportation out of state for people, or as the sponsor will say, that what is meant is that they have a 90-day period. Well, that's fine. I believe in all legislation having some period in which the people, citizens of our state or those out of state, can know when the law will take effect. Therefore, we say nothing. There's no effective date. It's the normal procedures under Statute 01, and Section B would take care of that. but we just say nothing. In this case here, it sounds like there's an effective date, which isn't in the title, and I want to know with the sponsor, do they want to do something this season for out-of-state workers? If so, then we should perhaps have an immediate effective date, which will probably be around May. If we don't want an effective date this season, then it will take in place mid-season of the construction of the fishing, which is around September 1st. And then you hit the major employers of out-of-state workers, the three major ones, tourism, fishing, and construction. So you hit them in mid-season, and just those people who were hired mid-season or after the date will be entitled to out-of-state transportation. So I'm on a clarification more than anything else. I felt either we say immediately, as the amendment does, or we delete Section 4 and just let the law take its normal time.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Section 4 is not an effective date clause. Section 4 is a substantive clause of this legislation that clarifies who this legislation shall apply to. And Section 4 makes it clear that this act only applies to individuals hired on or after the effective date of the act. It doesn't establish what that effective date is. And I would also speak in favor for not having a specific effective date on this act, because I strongly believe that once, and I hope the governor does sign this bill into law, employers will need a reasonable amount of time to comply, to educate themselves and comply with this legislation, and that would be 90 days under existing law. Section 4, again, I just repeat, is not an effective date. It's a substantive portion of the bill. It relates to who the act applies to.
Representative Taylor.
Just a brief at ease, if we might, Mr. Speaker.
Would the House please stand at ease? Come back to order. Before the at ease, we had Amendment Number 1 before us and under debate. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With the understanding of everyone that this does mean 90 days after is the effective date, I will withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
The amendment's in the possession of the body. Does anybody object? Hearing no objections, Amendment Number 1 has been withdrawn. Would the clerk please make reference to the second amendment before us?
It is being duplicated, Mr. Speaker. Amendment Number 2 by Taylor to page 2, lines 4 through 7. Would you like me to read it?
Would the clerk please read the amendment?
Page 2, line 4, delete or, replace with the word and. Line 5, delete, the person was located outside the state when the employer agreed to employ the person for work inside the state and. It is being duplicated.
Representative Phillips.
Speaker, I don't want to vote on this until I see the amendment.
Okay, the requirement, of course, it be, you know, it's on the clerk's desk, but would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, the clerk had just read Amendment Number 2. Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Amendment Number 2 and ask for unanimous consent.
Hearing objection.
Mr. Speaker, on Amendment Number 2, the purpose of the amendment is to clarify what, if this law passes, we're really putting into law a very vague standard upon which we will determine whether or not people receive reimbursement back to their point of hire. At least that's what the old law meant to do, that only people who had been hired outside the state would, or outside of the location of the employment, would be reimbursed. I don't know exactly what we're doing here, but what I think what we're really doing here is we're saying, if I am a worker in New Zealand, I'm an American citizen down there on vacation, and I hear somehow about a job in Alitak, Slime and Fish, and I call up Alitak and I say, hi, my name's Rob, I'd like to go to work for you. guy says, gee, we really need fish slimers. Can you be here on Monday? And I say, sure, I'll be there on Monday. Fine, we hang up. He has no idea where I'm calling from. All he knows is he needs a fish slimer, and I called up and asked for the job. And I told him I'd show up. I show up in Alitak, and I start sliming fish, and I decided I don't like it in Alitak, and this fish sliming is not really my bag. So I go to the employer, and I say, no, I just can't make it on this line. I'm quitting. By the way, I'd like my airplane ticket paid back to New Zealand. That's what this law does if you don't pass the amendment. It's exactly what it does, and it's exactly what the intent is, I believe, of the sponsor to do. It puts people at jeopardy when they shouldn't be. The old law we had, and this bill was given to us on the basis of that, and I think it does, clean up some old vague aspects of the old law. It gave it a statute of limitations. It provided some definitive dates and times within it that the department had done administratively before, but really didn't have any legal background to do. To that extent, it's a good cleanup bill. I support the concepts within the bill. But the old law said, if I, as an employer, pay your way up here, I'm obligated by law to pay your way back. That was a simple objective standard. The Department of Labor could come in and they could ask, if I was the employer, let me see your paychecks here, let me see your books. Did you pay this guy's ticket up here? And I'd have to say, yeah, I paid his ticket up here. Well, then you owe his way back, because we don't want this person sitting on unemployment up here in our state and sitting on our welfare rolls in this state, so it provided a good public policy. Now, what will the objective of proof be? What will the standard be that the department looks to? The department will say to the employee, where were you hired? The employee say, well, I was located in New Zealand when I got this job. That's where I was standing, talking on the phone, was New Zealand. I was located there. Doesn't have anything to do, Mr. Speaker, with who paid who to fly in or fly out. And as a consequence, it's going to be very difficult to enforce. And there is no objective standard. And furthermore, we're putting all employers in the state at risk. And I don't think we intend to do that. I think we intend here to make certain that people get their way paid back and they don't get abandoned up here by folks. At least that's been our policy for a long time. So I'd ask you to support the amendment for those reasons. I think it makes a better bill out of it. I don't think it hurts the legislation, unless maybe I don't understand what the real purpose behind this legislation is.
To amendment number 2, Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The legislation is very clear in its intent, very clear in its applicability. The section that the proposed amendment number 2 affects, paragraph 2 on page 2, clearly states that the requirement for the return transportation applies to those individuals who were located outside the state when the employer agreed to employ the person. Now that's the trigger. That's who it applies to, Mr. Speaker. But that right is identified on the first page of the bill, in the very first paragraph, section A. And that right is the right of return transportation to the place of residence at the time of hire, or to a destination the employer and employee agree to at the termination of the employment contract. That's the residence. That's the home location. Well, in one aspect, the previous speaker was correct, in that if there was a United States citizen who had a home, who was a permanent resident of New Zealand at the time he called Alaska, and the Alaskan employer didn't ask, you know, are you here in Alaska, or where are you located, and went ahead and committed to the contract, yes, they would be required to provide return transportation on this legislation. But, Mr. Speaker, the Department of Labor routinely handles these type of claims. And when there is a question between an employer, and I believe that would constitute somewhat of a misrepresentation or a lack of information that employers should rely on, is existing, the Department of Labor the employer has the right to refuse to provide that transportation, and the employee brings their claim to the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor decides that claim at that time. They're currently doing that, Mr. Speaker, for some 50 cases a year. So there is an existing procedure for these type of special circumstances. The return transportation is to the place of the person's permanent residence, not the place where they were located at the time that they called from. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, there are additional safeguards that this bill doesn't change that are written into existing law. Simply because someone decides they want to quit for no good reason, an employer is not obligated to provide return transportation. Under existing law, they're required to complete their contract of employment and comply with the terms of their employment. So again, Mr. Speaker, the example given is not accurate in those in that context. In conclusion, I think the bill is very clear the way it is currently. The proposed amendment guts a very important aspect of this legislation, so important that it's restated in the title, in fact, requiring payment of return transportation costs for workers hired from outside the state. That's how important it is, Mr. Speaker, and I oppose the amendment.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The comments of the previous speaker, I think, avoid the question that I asked, and maybe I should repeat it. The title certainly does say that we will require people to pay transportation back to the point of hire. We've always done that in this state. That's nothing new. If you hired somebody from outside and you brought them up here, we required you to pay their transportation back to that place. What has really happened here is we have inserted a new word, and that's the word located. Why didn't we use the word reside? I don't know. If in fact that's the concern, I don't think the concern is located or reside. The concern is the point of hire and whether or not you have an objective standard to measure it by. We have an objective standard if you have an airplane ticket that I, as the employer, paid for to get him up here. That's easy to prove. What's the employee going to say? He's going to obviously say, my residence was in New Zealand. Send me back to New Zealand. Who's to debate him on the question? Who's to prove that his residency is not New Zealand? Nobody. Because it will be wherever he claims it to be, Mr. Speaker, where in the past it was what the parties had not only agreed to, but had objectively paid evidence, money, to get the guy up here, or the gal. And as a consequence, it was easy to enforce. I think that what we're really trying to do here, there's a hidden agenda involved in this legislation. And it appears as though it's some sort of concept having to do with employees any place in the world being able to get transportation back. But it really isn't very well explained, and I think that's the part that bothers me more than anything else, is that what this thing is really being sold as one bill of goods over here, but there's a different agenda coming along with it. And I'd really like the party who's offered this bill to explain that agenda to the rest of us.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the amendment, I don't think it's really too hard to understand what's happening in the bill. In fact, I think, contrary to the remarks of the previous speaker, in a sense, the restrictions, if you will, on who would qualify are in a way even tightened under this dual language, in the sense that on page 1, line 14, we discuss the person's place of residence, and that's fairly straightforward. The person has to be a resident of some place other than Alaska. And then you get on to the second page, and it speaks about the location at which the person was hired. So there are kind of two criteria that have to be met to qualify. You've got to be a resident of somewhere else, and you have to be hired from somewhere else. And I think the agenda is pretty clear and kind of nice. When an employer gets one of these anonymous phone calls from mysterious places, he'll say, "Where are you calling from?" And if the person says, "From down the block," the employer is going to say, "Come on over." And if the person says, "From New Zealand," then the employer's going to think twice about whether or not he could get a better deal by hiring somebody from down the block. And as a representative of many coastal communities where we hire a lot of fish slimers, I'd kind of like to see the people down the block get the job before the fellow from New Zealand. So I oppose the amendment.
Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, oppose the amendment. I think that what we have to think of here is not the transportation costs back to New Zealand, but that versus how much we're going to, the state's going to pay to keep that person in the state that's now unemployed.
Representative Donnelly.
Mr. Speaker, to simply answer the questions posed by the representative from Wrangell, the question was, who's going to question the employee's assertion that they were a permanent resident of New Zealand? First of all, the employer, and second of all, the Department of Labor in its administrative decision on that subject.
Any further debate on amendment number 2? Representative Taylor.
Since it's my amendment, I'll try and wrap up, Mr. Speaker, and briefly, too. The I believe that there's two people. I believe a little stronger in local hire, if that's what we're really pushing for in here, than maybe the sponsor does, and maybe the people who have spoke against this bill do. I believe so strongly in local hire that if that guy lies about it or somehow misleads the employer and comes up here to this state, I don't think the employer ought to be punished. I think that person ought to be punished. I think he ought to be told very clearly that no, we're not going to pay your transportation back so that you can have the privilege of coming up here and taking a job away from the fella down the street, as the representative from Haines so accurately put it. Because we're all tired of seeing the guy down the street lose the job to the fella from out of state. This gives the fella from out of state a big bonus. He can run to our State Department of Labor and demand that his transportation be paid back. Is that the message we really want to send? I want to send a stronger one. The stronger one is no. And that's why, right under it, if you read the next line, that's an amendment that I put in over on the judiciary bill. And that says that if they've attempted to establish residency in this state or take the benefits of residency, get one of our permanent fund dividends, apply for a resident fishing license, that they're denied. If they're going to claim to be a resident in Alaska, they don't get their way paid back out. Well, I think the same thing, if you take a person over age 65, Mr. Speaker, and we go with this needs thing, that person is going to be claiming their $200 or $250 longevity bonus and be working right up here. Then they can turn around after claiming that and demand their way back if it wasn't for that. That's why I put it in there, make sure that was going to be one tough provision. Now, this makes it even tougher. And if you believe in local hire, hit the green button along with me.
Are you ready for the question on amendment number 2? The question is, shall amendment number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the board? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
10 yeas, 28 nays.
Amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Representative Wallace.
May we please have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had just disposed of amendment number 2. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 43 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections as to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please read the title of that bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 43 rules by the Rules Committee. An act relating to return transportation for workers and requiring payment of return transportation costs for workers hired from outside the state.
Third reading under debate. Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. if it's the will of the body, they already understand the purposes behind this legislation. I'll make these remarks real brief. Just want to explain that this is an amendment to a law that was first adopted back in 1949. It's been on the books since territorial days. It makes four changes in the existing law, Mr. Speaker. Briefly, first of all, it requires an employer notify a worker of their right to return transportation under the law. Second, it puts a one-year limit on that right, so if a worker holds a job for a year or more or becomes an Alaska resident, and the employer is not obligated to pay return transportation costs, Alaska resident pertaining to those folks who are hired outside. And it additionally requires that an employer pay return transportation costs for workers who are located outside the state at the time of hire, regardless of whether or not they paid their way to the job site. And fourthly, Mr. Speaker, HB 43 defines employer to include the state and political subdivisions of the state for the purpose of this bill. The state already does that. This merely clarifies it and puts it in the statute. I would note, Mr. Speaker, that in current law, and it isn't changed under this proposal, a worker forfeits their right to return transportation if they are fired for cause or they fail to complete their employment agreement. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Martin?
Mr. Speaker, I think I'm beginning to like the bill, but I do have a couple questions. We do have a good system, and it's taken a few years to get it rolling so that more Alaskans will be able to get the seasonal job, which is a major element of out-of-state workers. And I'm wondering if the sponsor could let us know that in the cases where we have job service referrals, and of course, being a federal agency, that they're not allowed to ask the person's residence. They just know what jobs are open and they refer them to these jobs. Then also, in our union contracts with employers, major construction jobs or whatever it may be, the employer is not allowed without other reasons to refuse hire of that individual. It's whoever comes out of Union Hall is given that job, and that's part of the honoring the contract. And then thirdly, our universities, and especially ACC, from the students I talked to, have been really good in getting job referrals through that institution. Now, in a lot of these cases, the employer, perhaps in none of these cases, the employer will know where the individual is from. Is there a responsibility then somehow that the employee must notify them? I understand that in Seattle and in the unions down there, they can send an individual up for a particular service or a job. The employer may not know where that individual came from. So in this case here, can some employee say, hey, now I want my transportation back, and the employer didn't know in the first place where they came from? They went through legitimate agencies and thought they were doing good for that individual, and then suddenly they find they must pay his or her way back. I wonder if the sponsor could explain what clauses we have to protect the employer from using these services.
Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. The legislation speaks to the point of hire. And the situation with both job service and local hiring halls are that that point of hire would be from the job service, because they, of course, send people out to interview here in Alaska with those prospective employers. The employer is asking them to refer somebody. He's going to the site of the job service, which is naturally here in Alaska. And also with the union halls, my understanding is that all the union halls do have local hiring halls, although that sometimes through the local hiring halls the calls will go down to Seattle or some other locations if there's not local residents to fill those positions. Still, it would be the employer making the inquiry of the local hiring hall, so that would be the local place of hire.
Representative Collins, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I tend to favor the legislation, but I have two questions, and one of them was that I know as an employer there's a whole list of things that I cannot ask people,
And I'm wondering if that was considered in terms of whether an employer would be allowed to ask someone where they live. That was the first question. And secondly, the other question I have is, was there any discussion as to what constitutes an agreement to hire? So what an employer thinks is an offer of hire might be different than what an employee might think it is. And I wondered if there was any clarification as to what exactly constitutes hire. And if anyone who worked on the legislation could answer that question, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, the question of point of hire was extensively debated and discussed in the House Judiciary Committee. The testimony from the Department of Labor say they handle that issue currently with the existing law, and they're geared up to handle any questions that may come under this particular law or this particular revision to the law. But the was whether or not an employer is allowed to ask the residency of a individual prospective employee. I think clearly yes, they're allowed to ask residency, they're allowed to ask where they live at that time. There's no question to that. Currently we're requiring those kind of questions be answered under the new local hire and the public works law, and it's certainly an option. It's an individual action, it's not a state action.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question?
The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 43 rules pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
38 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 43 rules has passed the House.
We have some final action on some citations before us. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have five citations on the calendar today, and I'd move and ask unanimous consent that they be adopted. First, honors Tananaw Valley Sportsmen's Association's 50th anniversary. Second, honors George M. Sullivan. Third, honors Grandview Gardens Library. Fourth, honors Matthew B. Anderson. And the fifth, honors Leonard O. Steyer III.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the citations on today's calendar? Hearing no objections, the citations have been adopted. This brings us through the calendar. We are now on unfinished business. Any unfinished business to come before this body? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have six requests for excused absence, and I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the body approve these. First is for Representative Pierce from Friday, April 3, that is today at 5 p.m., to plain time Tuesday, April 7. Second, Representative Cotton from 5:30 p.m., April 22, to plain time Monday, April 27. Third, for Representative Boucher from 7:30 a.m., Friday, April 10, to plain time Tuesday, April 14. Fourth, for Representative Phillips, from 5 p.m. Thursday, April 16, to plain time Tuesday, April 21. Fifth, for Representative Martin, from 7 a.m. Tuesday, May 5, to 8:15 p.m. Sunday, May 10. And finally, for Representative Swackhammer, from 5 p.m. Friday, April 17, to plain time Tuesday, April 21.
Are there any objections from those people that are seeking to be excused from the call of the House? Ms. Minority Leader?
Can we have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House please come back to order? We were on unfinished business. Mr. Minority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to amend for Representative Pierce to extend that until playing time Thursday, April 9. As amended, I would move and ask unanimous consent.
Are there any objections of those people that are seeking to be excused from the call of the House. Hearing no objections, those members mentioned by the Majority Leader are excused from the call of the House. Any further unfinished business? Under unfinished business, we have an Ombudsman Selection Committee that at this time I'd like to appoint the following members. Representative Porchot to chair that, Representative Sund, and Representative Phillips. Any further unfinished business? Representative Barnes.
Speaker, may we have a brief meeting?
Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we were under unfinished business. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we move up the calendar, I believe, to introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce a young minister who has recently joined the Juneau community. He is a pastor of the First Shallow Baptist Church in Juneau, the Reverend Mitchell Patterson in Galerier.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm happy to introduce the assembly person from my district, Heather Flynn, in Gallery B.
Representative Ellis, was that who you sought to introduce? Okay. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce in Gallery B, Audrey Ambrose.
Where is Audrey? Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the floor before, I've talked about the young people from the alternative school, and there's one over helping in our office today. We call him Bubba, but he goes by the name of Bubba. I'd like to have you welcome Douglas Johnson, who's a junior at the alternative high school.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative
no
Barnes?
No guests, Mr. Speaker. Another brief at ease, please.
Would the House please stand at ease? Before the at ease, we're under unfinished business. Is there any further unfinished business to come before this body?
Mr. Speaker?
Representative Ellis?
Again, under introductions of guests. In Gallery A, Representative Brown and I have a constituent from the downtown district, Sue Bindio.
Is there any further guests for introduction? Any further unfinished business? Announcements of standing or special committees? Representative Navarre?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Judiciary Subcommittee on House Bill 46 will meet Sunday morning at 10 a.m. That's the insurance reform bill.
Representative Porchot.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We will be having another House Finance Subcommittee on Rec Rivers noon in House Finance Committee room.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, so the State Affairs Committee will be having a teleconference on Monday on Senate Bill 157, which is the Earnings Reserve Bill. A number of you have expressed an interest in this bill, and I'd just like to indicate that right now the teleconference will be to Anchorage and Fairbanks. If there are any members of this body that would like that bill teleconference to their district, would you please contact me? We have indicated that it is going to be the final hearing on 157 and that it will be leaving our committee on Monday and moving on to finance. So if you have an interest in having your constituency have an opportunity to testify on it, please contact me and we'll extend the teleconference to other districts. Thank you.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Along with today's calendar, the House Finance will hear House Bill 134, which was in subcommittee. It's an act relating to the option to put the permanent fund dividend into the corpus. Thank you.
Any further committee announcements? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Hess Subcommittee on the Student Loans Legislation, which includes the
The governor's student loan bill, 233. Representative Pierce has several bills. Representative Larson has a bill. We'll be having a special meeting in the Hess committee room tomorrow at 9 in the morning. That's Saturday at 9 in the morning, and I'd invite any member or their staff to attend.
Representative Sund.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just for those members of judiciary that plan ahead, I'd like to take note next Thursday, we're going to have a hearing on House Bill 146 at noon, and it's a statewide teleconference. The only time we get to teleconference that day is from noon to 1, so put it on your schedules. Thank you.
Representative Ellis.
A subcommittee of the Hess Committee will meet Monday at 8 a.m. in the Hess Room to deal with House Bills 91 and 92 relating to the mental health issue.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, under general announcements, the Red Dog Saloon Historical Society has elected this year to continue a tradition that was in existence when I first came to the legislature, and it would be the annual softball game, the legislature versus the Red Dog, and it would take place May 3rd. That's on a Sunday this year, and they're quick to note that we will not be requiring anybody to drink at second base or anything like that. That used to take place back in those days. It'll be a family event, and all members of the legislature will be encouraged to play, and if we run short, we might have to pick up some of the younger people that work for us.
Representative Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Monday, the House Resources Committee will continue taking public testimony through teleconference from 9:30 to 11 on House Bill 108 regarding aquatic farming. Thank you.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements. Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Ulmer and I would like to invite all members to join the Tourism Working Group for a meeting this Monday from 10 to 11 a.m. in the House Labor and Commerce Room. Our presentations this week will be made by Mr. Bob Denninger, President of Alaska Travel Adventures, and also Kim Tyner will be with us from the Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau.
Any further general announcements? Representative Taylor.
Yes, on behalf of Representative Sun and myself, I'm proud to announce to the body that one of our students up here from Petersburg, Vicki Duran, was just elected Speaker of the House for the close-up program over here. I don't need want you to worry about that, Mr. Speaker.
Any further announcements? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me particular pleasure today, in keeping with our tradition, to announce a birthday that occurred yesterday. It is my distinguished colleague across the aisle, the acting minority leader, Representative Pierce.
I'll drink to that. Any further announcements? Special orders. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to speak on setting the record straight.
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On Wednesday, we had before us House Bill 164. And at that time, there were several statements made that I've taken the liberty since that time to research to make sure that the record reflects what really happened in 1977 and 1981. Mr. Speaker, in 1977, there were statements made on the floor that, in fact, the oil companies objected to the F in 1977. With that in mind, Mr. Speaker, Senate Bill 238 was adopted by the legislature in 1977. An identical bill, House Bill 321, was introduced in the House. This bill replaced the previous stair-stepped tax rates on oil production per wells with a single maximum rate of 12.25. The legislation also introduced the concept of an economic limit factor, ELF, an adjustment to the percentage rates of tax applied to the oil. The oil companies were opposed to the changes brought about by the passage of SB 238 because the new flat rate, maximum rate of 12.25, significantly increased the severance tax on the oil companies over the former stair-step tax structure. Although the F was thrown in to help offset the burden of the tax increase, It was felt by most oil companies at the time that the application of the ELF would do nothing to lessen the burden of the tax increases on most fuels. This was because the way the formula for the ELF was calculated. The bottom line for the oil companies was that their severance taxes was going to be significantly increased under the new tax policies created by this bill. Consequently, they were opposed to the new tax law, which provided for a single maximum tax rate of 12.25. This was true even with the application of the ELF, because it was felt by the companies that the ELF would not lessen the burden of the tax increase on most fuels. And that is the history of why they were opposed to the ELF, Mr. Speaker. Then there was the comment made on the House floor that the bill that was passed in 1981 had been around for 24 hours. Well, Mr. Speaker, SB 524 was introduced and was sent from the other body to this House as a bill that would have allowed for tax deductions on equipment, etc. It came to the House Finance Committee, at which point the then senior member from the Eagle River area amended into that bill, House Bill 200, deleting some of the sections that were in the original Senate bill. Then that bill came to the House floor, where there were further amendments to it that deleted further sections of the original Senate bill. That bill then went to back to the Senate, where they refused to concur with the amendments, and there was a conference committee appointed, Mr. Speaker. That conference committee included former Speaker of the House from Ketchikan, it included former representative from Bethel, and a former representative from the Kenai Peninsula. Later, there was a new conference committee appointed after there had been new leadership in the House, and that new conference committee was made up of a former majority leader from Eagle River, and who is now a senator in the other body, also another former representative from the Kenai Peninsula, and again, the former Speaker of the House from Ketchikan. So indeed, there was much work on the bills, and they were around for a long period of time. The bill, having first been introduced in the Senate on 4-28-81, came over to the House 5-31-81, and was finally passed by this body as a conference committee report on 6-24-81. That, Mr. Speaker, is setting the record straight.
Any further special orders? Representative Taylor.
I should have done this under announcements this afternoon at 5 o'clock over in the court building on the second floor. My office has a responsibility this week for the TGIF, and I'd like to welcome all members to that and staff, and we should have a good time. If anybody plays any musical instruments, please bring them with you, or if your staff does, ask them to bring them along. Thank you.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to speak about the Corrections Department.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've spoken about my concerns about the 6th Avenue Jail in Anchorage twice before on this floor, and Mr. Speaker, I'd like to share with the members of this body a new concern that's been brought to my attention. I would first like to say that I applaud the Hess Committee for the overview on the department that they're having next Thursday, and I hope that many of the people on this floor will join me and that entire committee at that hearing, because I think a lot of questions need to be asked. Mr. Speaker, earlier this week, a young woman, 25 years old, was arrested in Anchorage for having an old fine that had not been paid. She was taken to the 6th Avenue Jail. She was handcuffed. She was turned over to the Corrections Department people who run that facility by the arresting officer, who was also female. The Corrections Department people put the young woman into a cell with a man who was also handcuffed. 10 minutes later, they put a second man into that same cell. He was also handcuffed. But we had a situation where a young woman was put into a jail cell with two men and left alone. Mr. Speaker, understandably, this young woman was very upset, more than a little bit scared. Her mother is even more upset. Mr. Speaker, the officer who had done the arrest is the person who came back to the front desk and said to the people, why did you do this? Why is this young woman in a cell with men? And they said, we don't have any place else to put her. The arresting officer said that she would stay with the young woman, that they had to take her out of that cell, that she would stay with the young woman until they found someplace else to put her or until they could take care of the problem and she could pay her $25 fine. Mr. Speaker, if the arresting officer had not had that kind of compassion, or perhaps hadn't noticed, that young woman might have been left in that cell with two men for no telling how long. I think that the department continues to have some major problems. I think that just writing rules to fit every situation that comes up after it happens is probably not addressing the problem at the Sixth Avenue facility. Thank you.
Any further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the body stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Monday.
11 a.m. Monday.